You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The title of Liza Monroy's debut novel, Mexico High, is something of a play on words. It chronicles an American girl's initiation into the sex and drugs culture of an exclusive international high school in the high altitude of Mexico's capital city. It's published by Spiegel & Grau, and I'm very pleased to welcome Liza Monroy to my show today. Hello.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Both you and your narrator, Milagro Marquez, are daughters of American diplomats posted in Mexico City, and the both of you attended an international high school there. Did you start off intending to write this as a memoir?
Yes, I absolutely did, and I got 75 pages into the book as a memoir twice before I realized something is simply not working. And what I realized was I was not the narrator for the story. It wasn't my story, because all of the things that I experienced in Mexico City were a random string of events that really didn't have a central focus. And so I developed it as a novel and gave Milagro a connection to the world that she was trying to get into.
And it allowed you to play with a lot of stuff that you couldn't have otherwise.
Exactly. The subplot of her finding her father, who is a high-class Mexican politician, was not something that I could have ever written from experience.
But I understand you're working on a memoir next, so will it cover the same ground? Have you finally figured out how to do this as a memoir?
The memoir is completely different, and it is. I am the right narrator for that because it's absolutely my story, things that I did and which happened to me in Los Angeles, Boston, and New York. So it's a completely different
everything
terrain.
But Mexico City.
Exactly. There are a few flashbacks to Mexico City.
Mila, as she prefers to be called, arrives in Mexico City just before her senior year of high school. But you spent all of your high school years in Mexico City. Did compressing the time make the story more compelling?
I believe that it did, and originally I was writing it as 4 years, and then I thought about why 4 years? What am I doing with all these summers and just this whole expanse of time? I felt slowed it down a lot. So when I compressed it to just her senior year, I also had the chance to do more of a fish-out-of-water story with Milagro because I had been there all 4 years. I had plenty of time to acclimate to the environment. And so using a character who was being thrust there for her senior year, which is a transformative time anyway, I felt gave it more impact, and I was able to condense the timeline and quicken the pace.
Now, when you start out writing a coming-of-age story, you have to be aware of the fact that there are thousands of novels that are already coming-of-age stories, and you want to do something that distinguishes yours from all the rest.
Absolutely. I feel that it was the setting of Mexico City that compelled me to write Mexican High. Absolutely, I wasn't looking to just write another coming-of-age story. It was a city that obsessed me for years, and ever since I left there after graduating high school, all I could think about was getting back and writing about Mexico and how do I go back to Mexico City, and it just became a place that I became obsessed with and couldn't wait to get back to.
Despite all the problems?
Absolutely. I think a lot of the problems and the conflicts that I write about in Mexican High are truthful, and yet I have definitely made them more dramatic than anything I experienced there. My time in Mexico City was largely positive, which was another reason that a memoir wouldn't have been as dramatic.
Well, there's the fear of being kidnapped.
Yes, and that is something that happened with my classmates and with people around me, but not so much with me. My mother and I kept a very low profile, and she was in the Citizen Services Department at the U.S. Embassy. So we definitely weren't in the same situation as some of my classmates who were the sons and daughters of the president or the person who ran Pemex. So they were way more at risk than I ever was.
And they're called fresas? The rich kids are called fresas. Strawberries? Why strawberries?
It's explained in one of the chapters, actually, when Milagro meets a friend of hers and doesn't understand who these kids are. The fresa is it's a strawberry, and the reason for strawberry is it's a very fruity-tooty fruit, they say. So it symbolizes that kind of high-class snobbery. They're also known as popis.
And they're real snobs about Americans as well, people from the United States, who they see as being a little too sloppy. They really dress well. You get the feeling that even though they live very close to the United States, they look to Europe for their inspiration.
Absolutely. And this was one thing that surprised me about Mexico City was there is this whole group of Mexicans who are of European descent, and they look European. They are inspired by the culture and the fashions of Europe. And that was very much in contrast to anything I had known of Mexico beforehand, which was, like I say in the book, mariachis, guacamole, those kinds of things. So this was very different.
And Mila realizes that as the daughter of an American diplomat, she's among the underprivileged at this school.
That was the main ironic twist about going to Mexico. You think as an American, you know, great exchange rate, you can have it all. And it was really the opposite in this school.
My guest is Liza Monroy. She's written a novel called Mexican High, which is published by Spiegel and Grau. Her mother, Mila's mother, who never married, has never told her who her father was, only that he was a prominent and married Mexican. So when Mila gets to Mexico, she thinks that her father must be nearby and naturally wants to find him. Why did you want to explore that issue of having a parent who is totally unknown?
I think there's an emotional authenticity to it as well. My father is Italian. This is another reason why this is not a memoir, because it involves so many cultures. And he and I are estranged as well. So I think that in my work, something I really wanted to explore was finding and reconnecting with a parent who was not in your life and who was not in your upbringing.
And so this is all about finding things anyway, because you get the feeling that, and I'm assuming this is true of you as well, that you found yourself through writing things. Mila keeps journals. But I suspect this book was a way of finding yourself as well, because living as a stranger in another land, no matter how exciting and exotic it is still a complicated situation for kids. Kids can't really root themselves under those circumstances in the ways that they can if they're just going to the place they've always lived.
Yeah, exactly. And being uprooted was a big part of my upbringing as well. So going into high school, not only was I an adolescent trying to find myself, I was also moving from Rome, where I'd grown comfortable, to Mexico City, and I was in denial about it for a whole year before moving there. I did not want to go, which was why at first I had a more negative reaction. And I think as far as the book, it definitely was a way of bringing back this time and coming to terms with this time for myself, even though it's not my story. It was very much an obsession.
Although there are parts that obviously come right out of your own experience. When Mila first arrives in Mexico City, DF, the equivalent of DC, she gets a summer job in the visa barn of the American embassy, something you wrote about in a nonfiction piece for Newsweek.
Indeed, that was in the My Turn column, and it was my summer job in high school, which was an interesting way of firsthand seeing what the immigration process was like and what people went through. And lines would form around the visa barn starting at 6 in the morning, and people would just be waiting in this. It was called the barn because it literally looked like a giant barn with a fan that propelled air onto people. And I would take a cart and roll it out into to the podium and get behind the microphone and call out the names as the visas were ready and hand them back their passports.
These were mostly people who had money?
No, it was a big mix. Most people were turned away. One woman said she wanted to go to Disneyland for a period of 6 months. So there were a lot of reasons why people were denied, and they would have to really prove that they were financially solid in Mexico.
But the parents of the Freses that you went to school with, and maybe the Freses themselves, all have apartments in New York City, don't they?
Exactly. They do.
And so it's poor people who are affected by U.S. immigration policies.
Absolutely. The Fresas and the upper-class Mexicans didn't really have a problem with it because they could always prove they had sufficient ties to Mexico, and usually those ties were extreme.
Now, Milagro means miracle.
Yes.
And her mother named her that because she was something of a miracle?
Yes. Her mother, Maggie, was diagnosed with premature ovarian failure. So when she finds out that she's pregnant, it's an extreme shock. And so the baby is a miracle, so to speak.
But Maggie is a former hippie who becomes a diplomat. Isn't that something of a miracle as well?
Absolutely. I think that was something that my mother would never have done, the going down to Playa del Carmen and making jewelry. That's not part of her story.
But does this happen? Are there diplomats who are former hippies?
I'm sure there are, but for the most part, they are people involved with economics and international policy. So I think my story is not as plausible as that.
Well, let's get to the high part of your title, Mexican High. High schoolers in this country have been known to drink before they're legally allowed to and to throw parties when their parents are away, and these rich kids' parents always seem to be away. But if your novel is to be believed, this is carried to new levels of extreme in Mexico. Someone tells me that in Mexico, you're considered old enough to drink if you can see over the bar.
Yes, absolutely true. And that was a big shock for me coming to Mexico City, the fact that there were parties thrown by the student council that were called comidas, which literally translates to lunches. However, there was no food, and there was rum, tequila, vodka, beer. So with that kind of environment, teenagers also learn to control themselves very quickly.
So what happens if a kid has inclinations to be a teetotaler? No social life at all?
Well, probably they would veer towards other things, restaurants and different activities. But this was absolutely the main social scene in the school. And it was an amazing thing to witness at 13, 14 years old.
When Mila returns to Washington to spend Thanksgiving with a family, a friend's family, her friend is upset to find out just how much she's changed in a short time. Is that something that happened to you?
I would say it did. When I went to Mexico City at first, I feel that even though I had grown up around the world and witnessed many different cultures, that I was more sheltered than the teens who were older and had been in Mexico for several years. And it was definitely an eye-opening place. It taught me to just be responsible very quickly, but I also learned how to get away with things. For example, bribing police, which was an accepted activity there at the time, and from what I understand, has since changed.
Now, Mila's last name is Marquez, and I wondered whether that was a kind of an homage to Gabriel Garcia Marquez.
It wasn't in my mind, actually, though I did think of it afterwards. It was taken as part of her father's name, which is Marquez de Garcia. And so her mother, thinking that it sounded better and wanting her to keep a connection with Mexican culture, took the last name and gave it to her. And in the book, she says, I gave you the name because I think it sounded better.
The book is very nicely written. Do you think that it helped that you speak other languages?
Absolutely. Language has been an intrinsic part of my life ever since I was a child. I learned to speak Italian alongside English and Spanish when I was six, as my mother's first assignment in the Foreign Service was in Guadalajara. So a love of language was very important to me from a young age, and it's something that I continue to pursue. I love travel, and I think writing was a natural extension of just staying perpetually curious about the world and other cultures.
You've written mostly nonfiction articles for any number of publications. Did you find a very different writing fiction?
I did, actually. Other than taking a few short story workshops in college, I had not written fiction. And I thought I would remain within the nonfiction genre, essays and a memoir, and I thought that was going to be my career. But turning this to fiction gave me an incredible freedom to play and to just develop characters who weren't people I knew, and that was a new experience for me. Yet nonfiction helped me keep the setting grounded in truth. I wanted everything that happened in the novel to be plausible. These are things that happened to teenagers in Mexico City. I wanted that to remain true while being able to come up with the storyline, such as Mila looking for her father or her mother's background as a hippie.
Liza Monroy's book, Mexico High, Mexican High, is published by Spiegel & Grau. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.